Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Sam Larson from Northland Fishing Tackle. Now, Sam does a way better job of introducing himself and who he is, so I'll let him do that in this interview. But that being said, I have Sam on. He's a representative of Northland Fishing Tackle. He's the perfect man for the job. And this conversation is just talking about lure development, developing, producing, and marketing fishing lures specifically. I mean, that's such a big topic. So specifically, I chose crankbaits, like something that we could cover in and around an hour. We're talking about the crankbaits specifically, and Sam does a great job talking about the entire process that Northland Fishing Tackle goes through, starting with, you know, just the original idea for a crankbait and all the stages that it goes through, that lure is going to go through in its development before we, the consumer, see it for the first time and have a chance to buy it. And once we learn the details of how Northland, with their standards, produces and develops a crankbait, it makes way more sense why when you go to buy something with Northland on the package, it is definitely designed to catch fish. And that's true with a lot of companies. You know, the bigger picture of this conversation is that there's a lot of great companies out there that do a great job, and they work really, really hard to, they make a lot of really stressful decisions, and there's a lot of people involved, a lot of smart people involved to create baits that we anglers can be successful with, and it's something that is affordable and something that is flexible and has usability. I definitely learned a lot about the process. There's definitely a lot of new appreciation and understanding for what somebody would go through if they work in the industry for a tackle company and they're in, you know, lure development. Man, there's definitely some elements to this that I wasn't necessarily thinking of or had any clue about. And Sam does a great job talking about how Northland produces their crankbait. So anyways, let's get into it here. We got Sam Larson from Northland Fishing Tackle, and we're talking lure development. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River in the northwest angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Where does your fishing story start?
Yeah, so there's something about the water that I always loved growing up. And I think for me, you know, I'm a big visual guy. So I think a lot of it was kind of the mystery of what's underneath the water. So fish always kind of intrigued me and whatnot, and just got a love for it at an early age. I grew up in St. Cloud, Minnesota, so central Minnesota, but my family vacationed up north. And yeah, just fell in love with it and had a big passion for it. And actually when going to school, I came up to Bemidji State here, and I had ideas of going into maybe fisheries biology, and maybe art and design. And my freshman biology 101 course kind of gave me the answer of what my path should be, and it should definitely be art and design, because it's that biology stuff's tough. All the little stuff you can't see is tough. So I moved up to Bemidji, went to school here for 4 years, And it quickly became my home. Just the amount of lakes we have here is just incredible. We were fishing 5 times a week in college on the ice, open water when we could get it, in the spring and fall. And it was just an awesome place to be. And with that, I went to Bemidji State for, I said art and design, mostly kind of a graphic design input, but also we learned some 3D design elements in that through their program there. And my junior year, Northland Tackle had an internship open, and I applied for it. And to be honest, they were kind of looking for more of a writer, that kind of person to, in their marketing department. But I said, hey, I can write to the best of my ability, but here's what I do well. And I showed Eric Nag, the VP of sales and marketing at the time, the graphics I could do, the 3D design I could do. And he saw that as an opportunity, both in marketing for doing those things, but also in product development, to start working on drawings and stuff of some of the stuff they're working on. So that's how I got in there. Got a summer internship, and they hired me on part-time through my senior year, and I was lucky enough to get a full-time spot after that. And throughout that process, I've been involved in the marketing, product, but now I sit here as the product manager. So that's my day-to-day job. That's the stuff that people count on me for. I still assist in kind of all those other things, but working with all the products and making sure they're right and getting the new stuff in the door is what I'm here for. So, and I love it. And kind of going back to my fishing, growing up, I've always been intrigued by fishing or whatnot, and I've always loved to build stuff too. So I got into lure making, and early on I kind of decided that it was a lot easier to make big lures than small lures. So through that, I started making musky lures and kind of fiddling around with that. So early on in life, I kind of had a little bit of that product development going, and started to understand kind of what makes what happen. But getting here at Northland and working with some of our pro staff like Brosdahl and Jason, it's incredible how much more I've learned about fishing, and I can really implement that into the products now. So
Personally, are you a multi-species guy?
yeah, so I think personally, I like to describe myself as a multi-species guy. I definitely have my phases and my favorites. So like I said, kind of in that high school era, I was like musky, musky, musky. But as I got up to school here, I like getting bit a little bit more often than, one time a trip or whatnot. So now, although I'm a multi-species guy, the majority of my angling is bass, but I love fishing walleyes. I've caught some trout bugs here and there, and liked chasing trout. Just anything that bites, if I haven't caught it before, it's kind of, you kind of get that interest in it. And really, it's important, I think, to understand that in product development, because A, you can pull techniques from different species into other species, but B, developing the stuff, I kind of got to be, I can't just be a hardcore bass guy and be developing walleye products too. I got to understand the hardcore walleye guy too. So I like to kind of pride myself on doing multi-species. But if it's midsummer in Bemidji, you're probably finding me bass fishing on the weekend. So,
How would you kind of describe your, what your job is, or what you oversee, or just, what is ultimately, the big picture? Like, how do you describe what it is that you do at Northland Fish and Tackle?
yeah, so really, in a way, I'm kind of just a project manager, in that aspect. So, in product development, there's a lot of ways we get our ideas, we tweak our ideas, and we design our ideas. And that's not all on one person. I think the majority of our good ideas either come internally, or they come from pro staffs like Jason or Brosdahl or whoever. So my job is to kind of at the beginning of the cycle, which is kind of right around the first of the year, is we gather all that information. Okay, so internally we want this, the pro staff wants this over here, the sales reps say this is selling really well. So I got to pile all those ideas together and build a list out. Okay, And then from there, we take that list and we decide, okay, you know, kind of what fits in Northland specialties. What's an area Northland can grow a little bit in, and what's going to be a good seller, you know? So you can always trust that the Northland products, when we design them, they're going to catch fish. But I think a hard part of the job is, we got to make sure it's a really good regionalized product. So, you know, there's a ton of stuff out there that catches fish that's just maybe a little too niche for us here or there. We got to make sure it's a good seller. And the reason for that is the life of the product. It doesn't do you or me or anyone listening to the podcast very good if we design something that is an absolute fish catcher killer, but it's a little secret thing that only, you know, hundreds of people buy, and it's not thousands of people buy, and then we discontinue it in the next year, and then everyone's griping that we discontinued it. So it's a balance, you know. Like I said, it's tough to say that, but we gotta find a product that either fits or is easily marketable, so it spreads across the nation and everyone can catch fish on it, and it's not too niche, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, I think that makes sense. I feel like just the things that I've observed or been exposed to in my time in the industry, you know, things like that, you know, decisions like that have a big impact on, you know, even like how much these things cost. You know, I mean, there's just so much, yeah, you know, tech and engineering and just intellectual, you know, assets that go into this, that if something doesn't isn't easily used, you know, like you say, things that are real niche or things that might just be really hard to use, where you got to be on a real specific or a high level to really operate something to make it work really good. You know, something that's forgiving, something that a lot of people can use successfully in a certain area. If you're going to sell a bunch of them, that makes them, you know, you can price them a little bit better. I think, you know, if people look at some of these baits that are $30 a bait or whatever, and it's like, well, that must mean it's the best. And then you go and you buy it and you really struggle to make it work.
Exactly. And that's, like I said, that's one thing I have to balance, because that's one thing we get from a lot of our pro staff. You know, they're such good anglers. They find the stuff out and they know how to use it and know how to catch a lot of fish on it. And if we see it and we can't, you know, we see our marketing team not being able to explain how to do it, and it's not, you know, doesn't have to be necessarily take out of the package, and anyone can use it. But if it's not something super, you know, translatable to the public, we got to maybe look at that product, and maybe it's not getting rid of it, but it's like, hey, well, let's do it like this, and then it'll work better. You know, if it's, you know, say a pre-rigged bait or something that just makes it kind of bridges that gap between pro and average Joe, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you and I were just briefly for like 30 seconds talking before I pressed record, but, you know, we were kind of thinking about how, you know, this is a big conversation. This is like this is a big picture conversation that's going on, you know, all the different tackle companies across the industry, everything. We could literally do this probably, you know, for a couple hours a day for a couple weeks and still not cover everything. So we're going to have to pick a lane. And the lane that I kind of wanted to pick was crankbaits. And that in itself is probably still too big of a topic, but I kind of want to tackle, you know, a crankbait conversation. If we got to have a jig conversation, which we do, we're going to do that, you know, another time. But I want to talk, get a little bit more specific just so that we can cover some of these topics. Like you're talking about making these decisions, you know, about building baits and you know, sometimes the idea probably comes along kind of easy. Maybe, you know, things move really quickly. And in other cases, you kind of got to make some decisions. You know, maybe we got to table it. Maybe we got to keep workshopping it. I kind of want to hear that part of the story and maybe using some of your guys's, you know, some of your popular crankbaits is kind of the example in this of like, you know, what is sort of the origin story to some of these things, you know, getting an idea, compiling it and realizing, okay, this probably makes sense. And then what's the next step? What can you start? Let's get started kind of along those lines, and I'll let you pick. I mean, what's the most interesting story, I guess, or how we could tell this story with the Northland crankbait lineup?
Yeah, I think, rumble bug, rumble shad kind of to fit into that. And the crankbait deal is kind of fun for me to talk about it because, like people are learning about it, when it happened, it was a learning experience for me too. So I think it was 2020, we were able to acquire Bagley Baits, which they're a long-standing bass crankbait company in the U.S. And with that, Yarmo Rapala was actually designing all of Bagley's lures at the time. So as we acquired them, he was going to stay on and help us kind of design some of these new baits we wanted to work with. And the point of it was, you know, we're going to keep doing some Bagley stuff, but we really wanted to get some crankbaits into the Northland family, some balsa crankbaits, you know, designed for walleyes and whatnot with that. So, like I said, it was a whole new learning experience doing crankbaits, and especially balsa crankbaits. So every kind of product development process we do here, usually we kind of wrap it up in a year and it comes to market in 2 years. The crankbait stuff is a good solid 2 years. So it's kind of wild how long it takes to get some of this stuff rolling and out. But basically with developing a crankbait, there's a lot more to it. You know, a jig's kind of simple. We do some stuff, we tweak it, we pick the material, but building crankbaits, I tell you what, is like an art. It's not a science, it is an art. There's so many little things that go into it that Yarmo kind of, well, he designs them and gets us through to make happen. But to kind of wrap that up, basically the starting point for a crankbait is a spreadsheet. And on that, we're going to say, hey, we want to design crankbait for walleye. It's going to be made out of balsa, you know, with a polycarbonate lip. We want it to hit this dive depth. We want it to be floating. We want it to have a tight action, wide action, you know, whatever kind of action we're searching out. Three hook, two hook, whatever. And then maybe kind of like a general shape we're hitting or we're shooting for. And from there, we kind of hand that off to Yarmo, and we work with a really, really cool factory that's been designing crankbaits for years and years. And now actually it's part of Northland, but they have what they call the HCM process. So it's heat compression molding. And it's a little bit more, it's almost more like building a plastic bait than a balsa bait. So they kind of stamp out the pieces from there, and it allows them to kind of take existing shapes and bodies and put different lips into them, move the weights around. So we mess with it that way. Yarmo will take all those elements at his disposal and put together a bait, and then he sends it to us for first go around. From there, we're going to fish with it. Gonna check the dive depth, check the action, and then kind of come back with our tweaks. And he'll take that, you know, maybe shave the lip off a little shallower, move the weight forward, move the weight up, down, whatever it takes to kind of to get the action we're desiring. And a lot of times it goes through two or three prototype phases before we get to final production. So,
you know, one thing I'm always thinking about is like how much science, you know, like you're talking about biology and things like how much like fishy science goes into this when you're choosing sizes, yeah, and profiles. And even when you're thinking about actions, are you thinking about an action specifically that you want? And you're kind of working backwards from there, just trying to achieve that. Or are you looking at these designs differently where you just get them in the water and just see what they're good at, and just try to maximize that? Like how much of like that biology and science thought process actually goes into some of this stuff?
That's a really good question. So it can kind of happen in two different ways. Most of the time we are shooting for the targeted feature, you know. Depending on, you know, there's some science and rules in crankbaits, but like I said, there's some art too. So I think a big thing that's played for us and with our manufacturing process is for crankbaits, seems like the tighter the action, in cold water, the better it kind of goes. So we always, or I should say lately, we've kind of been shooting for that tighter action just because it seems like you get a lot of bites up here in the upper Midwest with that tight action. The art to that is achieving that tight action, right? And I think with this HCM stamping process we have, we get a lot more flexibility to where we can place the weight. And the weight and the bill and a little bit of the body shape really kind of dictates those actions. So traditionally, balsa crankbaits are made on kind of a lathe router. So it'll be one solid piece and they drill a hole in it and fill it with lead and call it good. So they can move the weight forward and back, but they can't really move it up and down in the body. And the HCM process kind of allows us to move it up and down and get the action we're achieving or we're shooting for. So like I said, most of the time it's like that. The flip side is every once in a while you get a happy accident, you know, and you'll get a bait back, or maybe Yarmo was making a bait and he said, you know, this isn't what you guys were shooting for, but I want to send it to you because it's got a really cool, unique action to it. And that's why I say making crankbaits is kind of more of an art. So there's some rules to follow, but then just the, you know, there's so many flexible elements in a crankbait that it doesn't always work that way. And you kind of got to try a few things. It's not like, well, if it's, you know, 3 inches long and the bill is this long and at that angle, it's going to do this. You know, there's some little tweaks. There's so many variables in there. You got to tweak it to get the kind of the action you're looking for. So,
and the action, like the way you're describing it, like adjusting action or is more of a function of, you know, the overall, the weight, the placement of the weight and the bill, and less about like the body shape of the crank.
Yeah, I think that's for sure the most important part. The body shape definitely does play a role, but generally, and you kind of asked that before, generally we'll pick a body shape to imitate a bait fish profile we're going for, right? And we're going to start with that body shape, and then we're going to adjust the weighting in the bill to hit the wiggle and the depth we're shooting for. Now, that being said, obviously certain bodies have a little different action to it. Kind of anything flat or semi-flat will have that tighter action. And like I said, that's why I kind of mentioned the Rumble Shad and the Rumble Bug have that kind of hybrid, new aged plug look where the sides of that bait are kind of semi-flat. And that really helps initiate that, that tight action. But again, once they take that body and take the bill, and I mean, it can be stuff as little, as minute as moving the pull point of the lure a millimeter forward or back. It can totally change that pivot and how the bait works. So it's like I said, as far as developing products, a crankbait is probably the hardest to get right just because there's so many little things to it.
I imagine there's, you know, all kinds of trade secrets and, you know, things that you can't talk about, things that happen, you know, behind closed doors. But, you know, I'm just kind of curious about that stuff, like in your experience and the things that you see developing these baits, like, you know, what are some of the things or some of the features that help a bait with that? You know, like we were talking before, you know, some of the features that help a bait be a little bit more usable.
Yeah, and that's another good, great question too. So like we were talking about earlier, usability is a huge part of a crankbait. So it could have the best action in the world, be perfect, but if it's anything that we think the consumers might cast, if it doesn't cast good, we can't bring it to market, right? So we got to look at all those things like castability, durability, you know, is this going to hold up fish after fish, hooking percentages, do the hooks get tangled up together? So there's a lot of little elements like that too, that, you know, action is most important, but usability is another thing that has to be monitored and checked to make sure we have a good quality product that everyone's going to be happy with.
Oh man, dude, I just think those are really great points that, You know what I mean? Like, I just have a lot of respect for any company. You know, you work at Northland. I'm more than happy to, endorse my experience, with my experience, Northland baits, catch fish. Absolutely. Northland's been around forever. I mean, just a Hall of Fame company here in the Midwest, but even just any company, just anywhere across, anybody that's willing to put all of that, or have a team of people that are making those considerations for the angler before a bait even hits the shelf. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I'm looking for, and that's the kind of stuff that's really the unsung. That's really what ends up not being really so much talked about. I think, just on a consumer level, like, we just see the highlight reels, we see all the marketing and the glitz and glamour of the industry, and we buy lures, but there can be a cloak. There can be, you can go and buy a really pretty bait off the shelf at a solid price point, and otherwise not know, but just really struggle to do well, right? Because again, maybe they designed it for something, a totally different application. It might be a lead core kind of a bait, or it might be it might be a trolling bait. You go to cast it. I mean, I'm not even thinking that as a consumer when I buy something. It's like, I know I'm going to cast it. Don't they know I'm going to cast it? Like, how do I, but when you guys are making those thoughts, I mean, I just think that's,
especially in today's day and age, authenticity is like super important to us. So I think, 10, 15 years ago, marketing from a company came very internal. The channels it was delivered at were very directive, and there wasn't as much of a community base as there is today with social media. So you could kind of, you could take something and turn it into something else, and it worked. People used it and it worked good. But now, I tell you, if it's not absolutely perfect, the user base is just going to pick it apart, and it's going to hurt kind of your whole brand as a company. So it's super important in today's day to have something that's really authentic, that's, really targeted too. Like, we're not trying to design a bait that's perfect for lead core and casting and, it suspends too. You can't get away with that anymore because the user base is so good out there. They read right through that. So yeah, having something really targeted is definitely important.
Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, and the Northwest Angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Yeah, I mean, so that, kind of going through the steps, we're talking about, the science, the real data-driven elements to the design after you get this good idea, and like you said, the art form. I'm curious a little bit, even still, talking about design and construction and things like that, like build design for you guys.
Yep.
Build design, what are some of the key features that you feel like, Northland kind of hangs their hat on that really sets their baits apart from the rest?
Well, let's talk a little bit about, like you're saying, the materials and the whole Northland bait, and I'll kind of hit a little bit on some of that HCM manufacturing process. I think that's the biggest thing that makes us unique. So, the majority of the Northland and Bagley baits we produce now are made of balsa, and balsa being a wood, a living, breathing material, it's, again, an art to work with. Every little piece is different from the other. But like I was mentioning, we start with our block of balsa. And this HCM process, we then kind of router down two halves in kind of a rough form. And then these two halves are placed in this mold and put under heat and pressure to kind of form the balsa into its final shape. Now, a couple things that does for us. A, it gives us a two-half building platform so we can adjust the weight. But really, I think the key is what makes balsa bait special. And for anyone who's ever fished a lot with balsa, is every 10 lure, you know, they all catch fish, right? But every 10 lures or something, you just get that magic one, right? That one that just has a little bit of different wiggle or maybe hits a foot deeper than the other ones are. And it's just something special, right? So with typical balsa manufacturing, I think you get a lot more of that variety. The Northland one, since that balsa is kind of compressed down, we take a little bit of those natural elements balsa has away and gets that window of how far or, you know, how much they vary tighter together, but you're still going to get a bait that acts individual compared to other, you know, any other baits. And I think that's what makes balsa special, right? That no two swim exactly the same. So the fish never really get 100% used to it.
Oh yeah. Actually, I was just having that conversation with Jason driving down the road, mm-hmm. like the other day, like it wasn't even in reference to this, you know, podcast and anything. I was just having that conversation with him, how, you know, it's amazing. It is amazing how that happens, like on a day-to-day basis, I guess, in my experience. And I've even, you know, I watch, you know, the top tournament guys, you know, where they, you know, they'll kind of divulge, you know, some of their, you know, in, say, a pre-fish for a top walleye tournament, say, obviously out on the Great Lakes is all kinds of trolling and stuff like that. But talking about crankbaits where, for whatever reason, and who cares why, I, you know, pre-fishing or fishing this week, I had this one particular bait that just caught my fish. Like I had the ultimate confidence with this bait in, you know, on this setup, you know, the way I was doing it. And so they'll set that bait aside and wait till tournament day to use it. They can't afford to let a yep. little pike bite it off. Right.
100%.
But at the same token, that doesn't mean that next week on a, maybe a different body of water or scenarios change, one of the other baits that maybe wasn't the best today will have that little subtle feature that it'll be the winner next week. So it's not like, yep. it's not like this one works and these other ones go in the garbage. It's like those little subtle differences. So, yep. you know, they all have their time and their place. I think that's a cool thing to think about where I guess my dream was like, you know, and I've seen guys do it. This is like, you know, I'm regurgitating this, you know, but guys will like serial number, you know, they'll just get a Sharpie marker or whatever it is. And they'll just, yep. you know, number their baits 1 through 5. That's like same color. So they're using it on the same line, the same rods, all the way across the board. They're giving all the walleyes the same, you know, the same presentation, you know, but when, if a particular bait itself, where you just don't get that with every lure design or whatever, but like what you're talking, those balsa baits. Yeah. We literally were just having that conversation the other day, how like when you can notice that, it's the same color, same line, same feet back, same speed, same everything, but there's a particular bait. Like that happens more yep. times if you're paying attention. Not everybody's going to pay attention quite so close, you know, to that, but it's amazing. And it does not mean that that's the only bait that works. It doesn't mean the other ones go in the garbage, because a month from now, the bite changes a little bit and the action of the other one that's slightly different is going to yep. be the winner, right? I mean, I think that's a very interesting, a very fishy part of this conversation that a lot of anglers, if they really want to pay attention, I think that could be a really cool takeaway for a lot of anglers. I didn't want to overstate that or understate that.
No, yeah, for sure. You get that one that you mark up and that one only comes out on tourney days or in certain situations, or, you know, that one dives a foot deeper than the rest. But I think, like I said, that's a really important part of balsa. And, you know, it almost sounds bad from us as a manufacturing statement that I say not all of them are going to run exactly the same, but I can't stress enough how important, you know, that's why balsa baits get bit, you know, just those little subtle differences. And again, that HCM manufacturing process tries to make them all within a smaller window of varying, you know, because you can sometimes get a traditional balsa bait, you know, especially like a bass style one that will dive 3 or 4 feet different than the same color in the same box that you bought on the peg, you know, right behind it. So we try to kind of narrow that thing, but we still let a little bit of that art shine through, and have those special magic baits. So I'll say they all catch fish, but there's, you know, one out of every five catches a few more. So
your guys is, you know, that HCM, does that stand for anything?
Yeah. Heat compression molding.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah. You said the process
of, of taking the balsa. And again, it kind of squishes the balsa. So it makes, the densities and all that a little bit different. Cause like I said, being a natural thing, when balsa is growing, which balsa grows extremely fast, you know, if it gets more rain or whatever, I'm not a forestry major, but that grain is going to change a little bit from each log, each condition it's made of. So by kind of pressing it down into its form, we get a little bit more consistency out of it.
Yep.
But each piece is still unique. So it's really, really cool.
You're narrowing that window where you have that consistency where every single bait is to Northland standards. But yes, I agree 100%. I think that's fun as an angler sometimes. If you fish enough, it's sort of a sign of if you're spending enough time on the water, if you're realizing some of those, you know, subtle differences.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, I guess talking about dive curve, I don't know if that's, you know, I think people might realize that, you know, some of these things might sound a little bit obvious, but I'm sure that you have, you know, more to the story than what we just observe as a consumer that, oh, there's a bill, the size, the shape, you know, the pull point, you know, that's probably the broad statement as to, like, you know, the features that dictate dive curve. But, you know, when you're coupling dive curve with action, there's probably, you know, some overlap with some of those things with, you know, you've got bill design that controls elements to the action. It also controls elements to, you know, how deep it dives. And do they ever fight each other? Do you ever have issues trying to figure that out with, like, bill design? Or what are some of the features of bill design that, you know, there's more to the story?
Yeah, I think a lot of that, that's where we're kind of messing with that, that angle of the bill plays in. Where I mentioned the pull point kind of changes the action a little bit because that is the access point the bait's rocking on, right? So I think that's the big player there, but, you know, adjusting that angle of the bill to hit that curve you want, is another little art to it. And just, again, tweaking it, getting it right. Another thing we really shoot for is trying to get those baits diving as quick as possible and kind of hitting their depths there. That way, you know, trolling, it's not important, but especially for casting, if you can get a long cast and get that bait down to depth, it's going to maintain at that depth through the strike zone, you know, longer, which you're going to get more fish through. So yeah, it's definitely like little tweaks and angles. And like I said, it's, I wish there was more science to it, but it's a little bit of an art of playing with two or three prototypes to see what each one's does and how you're going to get the desired attributes from there.
Yeah. I think that's cool that we're still in that day and age where there is a lot of art into it. And right. There is still a lot of, like, mystery to it. Like, maybe someday, you know, beyond our lifetimes, there'll be so much science put into this to where you could literally just draw up, you know, you could just go online and just order up the exact everything that you want. And, like, some machine will just spit out a crankbait that is exactly what you ordered. But, you know, the idea that we're still in this day and age where you're just realizing these really cool actions that are unintended. And some of these little features where, you know, there's still just, I don't know. I like the thought of that. It's almost kind of how we romanticize as anglers. There's still certain elements of, like, mystery and or luck or just, you know, some of that stuff that's, you know, we as anglers can all kind of individually realize and experience. And it's not all just a, you know, because eventually, you know, fishing is going to be just a, you know, I don't know, all the mystery is going to be out of it. There's no secrets anymore. We can see the exact fish. We catch every fish that we see on our electronics, and we have the lure, you know, I mean, like, golly, you know, like, I hope it never gets to that. I like where we're at right now.
Yep, exactly. And I think you're right that you could probably scan everything and plug it into computer programs and figure all this stuff out. But at this point, it's sometimes almost easier and quicker that, like I said, there's so many variables between body shape and how the water is interacting with the body shape and the lip and the angle. The amount of data points are kind of endless, but that's why we get on an idea, we have it confirmed by an expert, we make a few prototypes, and then we just tweak in the direction the prototypes are going. And that ends up working out really well for us. And we usually can achieve exactly what we're looking for that way.
And, you know, one other thing that I think about that, you know, I don't know if it's a challenge or not, you have to tell me, but, you know, anglers, we have so many other gear options nowadays where your rod action can influence, you know, say a presentation or the action of your line selection. And this is casting or trolling, right? And maybe one, you know, given the scenario or given the crankbait itself, like, you know, one over the other in different situations, but everybody's using maybe a little bit different stuff. We all have a little different preferences for whatever reason in our own way. Like, is that even a consideration? I mean, that probably falls down back to, you know, these baits that are more usable than others. Like, but, you know, how do you sort of tackle that? Is that just a marketing thing? Like when you find something that works really good on maybe kind of in a specific setup, or I don't know, how do you sort of explain that from your side of things, that your considerations you're making?
No, that's a super good question. So a lot of times with the crankbait stuff and really with everything, we kind of shoot for what your average angler is going to fish with. But for example, line diameter is a huge play for crankbaits, right? And material for that matter. So if you have a heavy fluorocarbon, that's going to help that bait sink a little bit. But you also got to play with the resistance of the line. So that's why when we do our dive jeps, we kind of keep it general, you know, like a walleye bait, we're basing it off 100 feet of line with like 8 pound mono, usually 8 to 12 pound mono is generally where you're going to get there. Bass baits, usually 12 to 15 pound fluoro. But yeah, it's all little things in there. And I guess that kind of, that's the little tweaks the angler gets to play with to see how they can get it to run and whatnot. You know, there's apps out there nowadays that tell you exactly where it's going to go. But we kind of, again, because we're trying to sell to the mass consumer base, we try to kind of hit the law of averages and design that bait around what we think, you know, the majority of the anglers are going to be using it for.
Then color, you know, do you guys have, you know, color is definitely a big thing with marketing, right? There's so many colors out there. Everybody wants a color. You know, we all have, you know, there's just a million opinions on color and everybody's favorites or whatever. Is that the last thing when you're designing lures before they go to sale? Like, do you guys just have a template of colors that you're just going to put on the first 10, you know, 10 colors, 20 colors that are going to go out? How much color do you guys play around with? Like, where does color fall in the line of development?
You know, I think if someone asked me what the two hardest parts of product development are, the second hardest part is picking the colors. And one of the hardest parts is picking the name.
Right? Oh, right on. Oh, yeah. So, we hadn't even talked about name. Yeah.
And I'll tell you why that is. The action, the lure, the design is easy because I know and I can test with fish and I can say, yep, this works. This does what we wanted it to. This looks like we wanted it to. It's going to be this price, right? When it comes down to color and names, everyone has an opinion, right? There's not a fish saying, oh, I want this color all the time, or a consumer, you know, there's no answer to say, yep, a consumer will always buy it if it's named this. So there's so much more opinion in those two topics, we gotta it's more of a challenge. So what we do, generally I will, let's say we're shooting for 12 colors in a family. Generally, I will have the manufacturer design like 18. And we will reach out to pro staff. We'll check historic sales data. And then we'll also check what's on the market and try to find a little bit of everything. So let's say if I'm designing or I design 18 colors, I'm shooting for 12, I'm probably going to have four colors that are tried and tested in clear water, four colors in dirty water, and then maybe four colors that the market's never seen before. So again, since it's an opinionated thing, we have to have a good variety of what will check all the boxes for what we know our customers will want. But there's also a little bit of variance in there. And it's easy too to come up with 20 colors, especially in the crankbait deal. A lot of our crankbaits now have 20 colors. But on the backside of that, it's a challenge for our warehouse and inventory team to make sure we manage that properly, so that if sneeze is your favorite color in this size bait, we always have it in stock and always have it ready and available for you. So it's a challenge. I say the toughest part about product development is not designing the stuff. It's having to make those tough decisions and eliminating the stuff that will catch fish, but it's just, you can't have it all, unfortunately.
Yeah, dude, that's I love the way you say that, 'cause yeah, God, that's funny. It's like it's easy to please the fish. Well, it's not easy, but it's fun to please to work hard and to try to catch fish. But then how do you catch anglers? How do you get the consumer to want to buy it? 'Cause that's really what we're talking about here. To be a successful lure company, that's what those are decisions everybody has to make. And the color and the name, and man, I'm sure you I'm sure that you guys have had some very colorful name meetings.
names are the toughest for sure, because like I said, everyone's got an opinion, and there is never a right answer on the name. Sometimes we go with something really, really vibrant. I'm trying to think of what a good example of that would be. Even Mimic Minnow is a historic, long time name, and it's just, almost everyone knows a Mimic Minnow, right? So that was a great naming. But now too, with times changing, when we came out with the tungsten jig, we just called it the tungsten jig because we wanted everyone that was searching tungsten jig to type in tungsten jig
and
and
have it
find
come up. Sure,
a
sure.
Northland tungsten jig, and we were kind of the first people at that walleye tungsten, so we set it there. Now Rumble Series, for an example, you got to be have a little forethought into it too, that okay, you're gonna have the Rumble Shad, the Rumble Stick, the Rumble Shiner. Well, what happens when you develop another bait? Is that going to fit under the Rumble family? Do you have one oddball out that's not Rumble? So, like I said, there's a lot of thought that goes into names, and there is never a definitive answer. So it's challenging, but again, just like in designing the baits, you just got to try to please the most people. You're never going to please everyone, but as long as you try to please the most people, you're going to have a good product.
And what's the story behind the Rumble family? Rumble, all of them. What's the story there?
So that one actually went around in circles and circles, and we actually looped back to something Bagley was known for that we entered into the Northland lineup. So Yarmo designed the Rumble B, which is a plastic, rattling plastic bait, and it kind of had kind of that cult following among trollers. And again, like Mimic Minnow, the way Rumble just rolled off the tongue for a shaking crankbait, we just thought it was really good. So and we knew we could call Rumble Shad, Rumble Shiner, Rumble Bug. It works really well with a lot of other names in front of it. So that's how that family kind of came about. But we were deciding on names for that bait for, I don't know, if 4 months, maybe felt like longer. It was a long time before we came to that conclusion. And now it's kind of accepted as that household name that if you're tossing Rumble, you know, it's a crankbait in the Northland family. So
I'm sure, you know, like books could be written by companies like Northland about the, you know, I can only imagine, you know, you get, you know, somebody's dog to walk around in the room and wherever they lay down is how you decide the name of a crankbait. Or I'm sure there's probably some hilarious stories like that over time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's wild stuff.
Like, how could you? Yeah, I imagine that's just, oh my gosh. And you always want to, I suppose you always want to be, you know, just out of respect for everybody involved. You want to give everybody their say or their chance or their vote or whatever, but it'd probably be easier if it's just, you know, two people had that job and you just make a decision and go.
Yep. John Peterson, the founder of Northland, he's someone to look up to when it comes to the development, the name and the marketing, because he leaves no stone unturned. It's really cool. So he's been helping us on some baits lately, and we're kind of in the design process of it. So we're talking about action and this and that. But it's cool to see he was writing an email to us, and as he was talking about the design aspects of it, he's starting to throw around names of like, oh, we can call this componentry so-and-so and this. And so you can see those gears thinking about the marketing before the bait's already done. And I think that's important. And if you can line up all those things and have a good product that's easily marketable with a rememberable name, you win.
But yeah, I think that also, as we get in this far in this conversation, talking about, you know, an idea that starts and it gets to a design phase and just, you know, your guys's with your balsa baits, that heat compression being unique and very cool and very functional. I mean, that really is, you know, a big part of the quality that you get from Northland, you know, and everything, talking about the design and all the everything that you guys are doing. And then the business side of things that you're considering, like, you know, and the naming and the colors, and, you know, it all has to come together for this to be a success. I can only imagine how many great ideas that just
that never
have to
made
be
it.
Tabled or just never make it, or just how many ideas that were absolute fire for the first 6 months and then just, you know, it comes to a screeching halt when something just isn't making standard. I can only imagine how often that happens.
Yep. No, it's like I said, that's the toughest part of coming out with something that just catches fish or whatnot. But like I said, with today's day and age and how dialed in the consumer is, you can't afford to have any flops. So sometimes stuff sits on the table and never comes out in the market. Sometimes it sits there and waits till the right time, you know, is ready. It's a process. It's a lot of tough decisions, but it's a lot of fun, especially when you come up with something that works and you see the success and you see people catching fish on it and finding a love for it. So,
yeah. Well, man, you know, we'll have to kind of close this out for the sake of time. I mean, this isn't the last time we're going to talk about this, if we come back and get even more specific on crankbaits, but definitely, you know, I want to have a conversation with you, you know, on your jigs and really, I think that these are the types of conversations that a lot of anglers like to hear about. And it helps you with your buying decision. I mean, I'll go ahead and say, you know, for me, I'm a consumer first and foremost, that when I'm doing these interviews, when I'm listening to people talk, like I'm just trying to take something out of it that I can put into my own game. And when we're talking about bait design and just knowing everything that goes into it and some of the exclusive things that you guys do to produce baits, just goes to show why there's quality there and other companies. When I'm looking at, when I'm sizing up, you know, buying any bait for anywhere that I'm going to go, it doesn't have to be Northland. I think that a lot of people ought to be listening to this and taking those things away of like, you know, how can I find out whether or not these guys are thinking about this? Like, is this a trolling bait or is it a casting bait? Does it say it on the back of the package? Do I know that, you know, the bait designers at a certain company are thinking about that for me, or do I have to spend the money to learn the hard way? You know, I mean, like you said, the consumers are definitely dialed in. And once you, you know, once you can build trust, you know, with the company, you know, that's huge. That has a lot to do with it. And it's definitely something that, you know, you guys work hard for. And so, yeah, no, I appreciate this whole conversation. Again, it won't be the last time, but what would be, if we're going to close this out, is there anything else that we got to talk about as far as your job and at Northland and designing and producing and developing the crankbaits there?
You know, I think with my last final thought is, you know, we all only get so much time on the water. So we're really trying to make those products work and be successful so everyone can have an enjoyable experience and make the most of it when we do get out there. So that's what we shoot for here. And I hope that's what all of our consumers see and feel like. But it's a lot of fun doing it. And we love making stuff that catch fish. So
there it is. And everybody in that office likes to fish. I know that, man. I can't believe you guys get anything done. The few guys that I can't believe you guys literally, I mean, you must, I mean, I don't get it. I almost feel like you have to do like some kind of a behind the scenes in the Northland office and you guys all fish. You're all fish heads. I just don't get how you get all that time in the water and you get to do what you do and produce these baits for us. I just, I hardly even understand it. It's like it's unbelievable. But kudos to you guys, man. Well, let's do this. I want you to promote, you know, we're talking about Northland. I think, you know, unless people are living under a rock, they're going to understand Northland Fishing Tackle is, but is there anything else that we should be talking about or promoting people where, you know, the resources where people can get more information or maybe some media, anything cool that you want to promote or even yourself, if you're willing to, you know, if people want to reach out, let's just end it that way, man. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Charlie does an awesome job on all of our marketing. So, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that's really good there, but it's also housed really nicely on our website. So that's a great place to learn, more about Northland products. We're trying to get, when, where, how on all of our stuff. So it's a good place to go to learn. So make sure to follow all that. You can add me on Facebook and Instagram too. So I do a little more personal stuff on there, but yeah, just love sharing, living up in here in the Northwoods. So
are you guys headlong into the podcast?
Yeah. So that's another thing when you're talking about how do we get any work done here. Usually Monday mornings are a little bit slow because we're all talking fishing. So we decided, well, why don't we record talking fishing? And we have been shooting some podcasts here and there. I'd like to get it on a little bit more regular basis, but the boys use it a lot for cutting up reels and whatnot. So yeah, you can find those on Spotify. I believe they're on Apple Music now too, or else the YouTube channel. You can watch the video version of it. So we get a few in here and there. So,
and what do you call that?
The Northland Fisherman, or Fisherman's Favorite, excuse me.
There you go.
Fisherman's Favorite Podcast. Yep.
Fisherman's Favorite Podcast at Northland Fish and Tackle. Yeah, dude, I think that stuff is all so great, man. And yeah, I love hearing that you guys are working hard to build the baits. I also love hearing that you like to fish. I think it all goes hand in hand in the industry that, you know, the companies, the entity, you know, all across the board, every corner of the industry, when you're looking at people that are successful, it all starts with the passion for fishing